From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. In California, more than 25,000 people have been confirmed to have COVID-19. Nearly 800 people have died. Stay-at-home orders are going to stay in place for a while.
There's no light switch here. I would argue it's more like a dimmer. And that dimmer is about what I was talking about, this toggling back and forth between more restrictive and less restrictive measures, more individual accountability.
That's California's governor. His announcement yesterday of a roadmap to ease the COVID-19 orders has made national news. The map has six benchmarks. Mass testing beyond the sickest people is first. Then ongoing protection from infection in vulnerable groups. Hospital and healthcare systems being equipped for a surge. New therapies being developed. New floor plans for schools, businesses, childcare centers, and facilities. And then the ability for the state to loosen and tighten restrictions, as you just heard in that comment by the governor. So last night in an NBC special, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute for Allergy and Infectious Diseases, was asked what he thinks is a must before any easing of restrictions.
The minimum thing is that you've got to be able to identify, isolate, get out of circulation, and do adequate and appropriate contact tracing as new cases arise. If you start pulling back on mitigation, physical separations, there will be infections. The real proof of the pudding of the success of this reentry is how quickly and effectively you identify them, you get them out of circulation, you give them care where needed, and you do contact tracing so that you don't have a beginning of a peak.
Dr. Fauci says we are seeing a light at the end of the tunnel. Joining us now by phone is Dr. Stephen Lockhart. He is the chief medical officer of Sutter Health. He is a trained anesthesiologist and has a PhD in biostatistics. Dr. Lockhart, I'm glad for this conversation. Thanks for joining us on Insight.
Thank you for having me. Good to be here this morning.
What do you think of the roadmap and these benchmarks that the governor of California and the other Western states have announced?
Well, a couple of things I would note. The first is that I think we're very grateful to the foresight that the governor and other local leaders here in California showed by putting in shelter-in-place orders and so forth early on in the crisis. I think that definitely put us in a much better position to not experience the magnitude of the peaks that were predicted, and it's put us in a much better position to manage patients' illnesses and to save lives. So as we look towards the ability to sort of open more things up, I think being equally cautious is important. I think that these six sort of overarching categories that the governor has brought to light are a great first step in us thinking about how we might go about doing that.
Over the past few days, the number of hospitalizations and ICU beds for COVID-19 in the state has been rolling, kind of a little bit up, a little down, and modest changes is the way the governor's been describing them. Have we avoided a surge?
Well, I guess what I would say is that what we are experiencing at the beginning of the crisis, there were a lot of projections, and we at Sutter Health made projections as well as I'm sure many other healthcare provider organizations did, about how many patients we might see in our hospitals, how many patients we might see in our critical care units and need ventilation and so forth. And those projections were based upon models that looked at how patients arrive and how many patients we might see and who might need care. There has been a modeling construct by the IHME, which is the Institute for Healthcare Measurement and Evaluation out of University of Washington, where they were looking actually not at the arrival of cases, but looking at the death rate and back calculating what resources would be required. And because they have access to huge, huge amounts of data around the world, their models are proving to be fairly accurate at this point. So we saw in early stages that we were exponentially rising and increasing in our cases. And now, according to the IHME models, the impact of these social interventions that we've been talking about has actually been much greater than originally anticipated. And so we are seeing a little bit more of a, if you will, flattening of the curve. But I wouldn't say we're not experiencing a peak. I would just say that the peak is not quite as high as what we had originally contemplated. But this is no time for complacency. It's not a battle that we have won. It's a battle that we're still waging, and we will continue to do so for some time.
On that IHME website, it looks like sort of a rolling peak, a rolling, maybe a bit of a plateau right now. Can you tell me more about what your projections were within the Sutter Health System and the number of cases that you have actually admitted and treated?
Sure. So we, Sutter Health, we provide care in 22 counties in Northern California for about 3.5 million patients. And based upon those projections, we thought we would see, you know, several hundred patients in our ICUs even, and we planned accordingly and put in process different stages of escalation so we could meet that demand. We have not yet experienced that demand. It's hard for me to really talk about numbers of cases per se, because, again, as I mentioned, we are still in the process of caring for many patients with the disease, and I would hate to sort of speculate on the outcome of that treatment for those patients. But we certainly have anticipated that we would see, you know, several hundred of patients in our ICUs. We are less than that, for sure, more around the sort of 50 to 60 range. In the ICUs, and we of course have many, many other patients that we've seen in the ambulatory environment or in the emergency department. I should say that the other thing that we have that we're experiencing that I think others probably are as well, that will certainly change the face of healthcare going forward, is the use of virtual visits and video technology. Certainly, in our ambulatory environment, we have gone from what used to be about 20 to 30 video visits, you know, sort of medical encounters through virtual technology per day to 5,000 per day. So the importance of that is that it's a way in which we can manage larger numbers of patients without exposing either patients or staff to the potential for infection. I believe going forward, it's going to be a way in which a lot of medicine, particularly in the ambulatory space, will be delivered.
That's a stunning change. How much do you think that this will continue long term?
Well, there's the Harvard study that came out suggesting that you know, we are going to feel the impacts up through 2022. I would say that I'm not in disagreement with that sort of basic time frame. I think until we have a vaccine, obviously, or a truly effective treatment, we will be really in the phase of mitigation and perhaps trying to suppress this this disease until we get a vaccine. So until we get a vaccine, I think we are not going to go back to the old normal. There will be a new normal, as Governor Newsom has noted. You know, there will be new ways in which we will provide health care, just as you talked about, new ways in which you'll go to a restaurant and have a waiter with a mask and maybe some gloves and disposable menus and all those things. The way in which we provide health care will have to change also in terms of how we think about being safe and protecting our communities.
I'm sure many doctors have thought about the thousands of surgical masks that they've worn in their careers and how you wear them, you toss them, and who would have imagined they would have become such a precious and counted commodity as they are right now. That's just one small example, isn't it?
Correct, yes. The utilization of protective, what we call PPE or personal protective equipment, has just skyrocketed as a result. And so we also have to be thoughtful about how we can create enough PPE going forward, and also the utilization of it. That's one of the ways in which, for example, the video technology has helped, because obviously you don't put on protective equipment when you care for people virtually. Another thing that really helped as we went through the crisis was the ability to get more rapid results for testing. Because of course, if you suspect someone may have COVID-19, you need to sort of wear the PPE under that assumption. But the sooner you can confirm that someone does not have the disease, the sooner you can stop using the protective gear. So I think PPE is going to be a part of our lives for the next year or two.
Along that line, do most people with COVID-19 end up coming in through the emergency room? And what is available now in the hospital setting for testing and rapid testing?
Well, the answer to your first question is, I think it depends a little bit. We have at Sutter Health done a lot of work on health equity and looking at outcomes by race and ethnicity and trying to make sure, certainly at Sutter Health, that our patients get care that it is equivalent in terms of outcomes regardless of race and ethnicity. And in many cases, we succeed. In some cases, we do not. As we've looked at some of our results with COVID-19, and these data are obviously, very, very new because we're still in the midst of the crisis, what we're seeing is there's a suggestion, at least, that some patients tend to get more testing in the ambulatory environment, and others, for example, our African-American patients, tend to get more of their testing at the emergency department or in the hospital itself. So it certainly raises the question about how different groups of people are accessing their care, whether it is in the ambulatory environment or whether, in fact, they're coming in at a time when they may be a little bit sicker and accessing it in the emergency department or in the hospital itself.
I'm talking with the Chief Medical Officer of Sutter Health, Dr. Stephen Lockhart, and Sutter Health is a system that reaches across 22 counties in Northern California. Let's stay with that topic of the racial data that's emerging right now that seems to be telling a different story in the West than in the East. Here, Hispanics and Latinos have a higher number of cases and loss of life, at least in the very early data. Other parts of the country, the impact is harder on African Americans. I know this is an area that you have a lot of focus and interest in. What's the data that we have right now saying to you?
Well, as you stated, it's early on, and we are going to learn a whole lot about this as we go forward. I think the most important lesson we can learn from COVID-19 is that it's sort of ripped the Band-Aid off of the issue of health disparities and health equity, and those inequities that exist within our system, in our society, are simply magnified when you have something like a pandemic to deal with. So I think we can expect that in some ways the inequities we've seen in terms of race and ethnicity will be magnified. Detroit and the African-American death rate there. You mentioned Hispanics and the Latinx population here in California. But it's also what we're finding interesting to think about is how care is provided state by state may be of interest. For example, California has done, I think, a very good job of having a Medicaid expansion and having coverage for all of its residents. And as a result, as Governor Newsom has stated, at least in the early data, I think there's about 50%, 54% of the data that he's looked at, his team has looked at, suggests that the percentage of racial distribution of the population matches that of those who were tested. So there may not be specific biases in who gets tested. But of course, as I mentioned earlier in the program, what we're seeing in terms of access or how people access the healthcare system may be different. So I think we can expect to learn a lot more going forward. I think we're going to, it's definitely an area that will be important to help us understand where we have disparities in our system, even some of which are sort of institutionalized or structural inequalities in our system. And hopefully this will be an opportunity for us to aggressively address those problems, because certainly when it comes to things like health and loss of life, there's no reason why there should be any disparities in a country and in a state as wonderful as California is, that we should be experiencing that.
I do want to tap into another area of your deeper education, and that is the statistical view of all of this. As you know, President Trump wants to or has pulled funding from the World Health Organization right now. We expect to hear from the WHO about that. And this leads to the point of the beginnings of this pandemic. Do you think there is more to understanding this virus's story in China? And I'm asking this from a statistical standpoint, the scope of its impact there and how it moved in the earliest stages?
Well, certainly from an epidemiologic perspective, I think there's still a lot that we would like to know about the origins of the pandemic and how it got started. I mean, for the listeners' purposes, I think one of the things that when we think about diseases like this, viral diseases, for example, there tends to be what we call an infectious ratio, or R-naught. For COVID-19, it's 2.4. And what that means in just regular terms is that for every person who is infected, they will then in turn infect between two and three other people. That then multiplied so that one person could, in a period of a month, maybe affect as many as 20,000 people just based on that one infection. So certainly understanding how the infection spread throughout Wuhan and then further through China and tracing the origins are really important. So going backwards to understanding exactly what happened in that market, if that's how it happened or if there was another origin, I'm not sure. Would be extremely important for us to understand the epidemiology of the disease and the spread, because that will be useful for us to understand how we need to think about it going forward, how we would need to do contact tracing and suppression techniques as we look now to the phase that we're in right now, the mitigation phase, where we can no longer contain it. It's everywhere. But if we understand the nature of the spread and how it spread through whom, that would give us a much better idea of how to stop it going forward. So, yes, there's still a lot that we would like to know.
That is so true here. Well, thank you so much for your time and your perspective today, Dr. Lockhart. I appreciate the conversation. And, of course, we wish all the best to you and all the healthcare workers on the front line there.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you this morning, Beth. Be well and be safe and do your physical distancing.
Thank you.
Thank all of the listeners for doing such a great job. It will be really important to keep that up as we move forward.
That's great. I think you just did. Thank you, Dr. Lockhart. That is Dr. Stephen Lockhart, Chief Medical Officer of Sutter Health, based in Sacramento. There will be another daily briefing by California's governor. That's today at noon, and you can hear it live on CAP Radio. Up next, a conversation about guns and gun buying in the midst of this pandemic. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio.